Well, joining me now on the phone is Peter Breen. He's the Republican state representative from Lombard. He's also the Illinois House Republican floor leader. Representative Breen, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
How are things in the Lilac Village this morning?
It is sunny and bright. As my lifelong Chicagoan wife told me once I moved her west of 294, she said, you know, it's a gorgeous morning in the land of milk and honey here at DuPage County.
And no major road closures because there's no marathon going on out in Lombard today.
Right. No marathons this morning.
Well, I wanted to have you on the program because obviously we're seeing almost daily, you know, reports of divisions in the Republican Party, and one of the main issues, or perhaps the trigger, being the governor's signature on what was known as HB 40. That's the bill that would expand taxpayer funding for abortions to women who are covered by Medicaid as well as state employee health insurance. And the governor, as a candidate, had responded to a questionnaire saying that he supported the goals of such legislation and vowed to work for it. In April, in the midst of the state's budget impasse, apparently in an effort to try to secure unity among you and your Republican colleagues against the Democratic legislative majority, he assured that he would veto the legislation. Then he went ahead and signed it. The fallout seems to continue. Talk about a potential primary challenge. Is it anything more than talk?
Well, and Rick, I mean, I think, you know, for your listeners of all parties, you want to see a vibrant and robust Republican Party, the same way you want to see a vibrant, robust Democratic Party, in order to have the interchange of ideas and principles from which hopefully we can provide the policies that can move the state forward. We're in a terrible space right now. The problem with what Rauner's done is that he did go back on his word. He had given his word to the people of the state and to the legislators and to the cardinal that he was going to veto this taxpayer-funded abortion. You're looking at 30,000 abortions becoming funded by tax dollars. And I know you had mentioned he had filled out a survey in the 2014 cycle, but that was actually a confidential survey. It was never revealed to the public. Instead, his public promise in the 2014 election was to have no social agenda. So he said, I'm pro-choice, but I'm going to do no social agenda, which most of us said, okay, you just don't rock the boat and let's focus on the economic problems facing the state. Republicans were, for the most part, willing to say, okay, fair enough, we can deal with that. So this was an utter reversal and a betrayal of his base. He had also just recently signed a bill that people believe turn our state into a sanctuary state, at least in some capacity. So that has been something that caused people some concern. And he went for 2 years with federal judges making the spending for the state, racking up all these billions of dollars in bills. Rauner had problems already. This signature really had fractures the entire Republican Party. I mean, Rauner had put a lot of deep roots in. He'd put his, if you'll forgive the expression, he has his tentacles in every part of the Republican Party all across the state because he's put so much money into it. And now he's fractured all of those tentacles. And it is, we're in a very bad spot right now. So, again, to your question, I think a primary challenge is inevitable, and there are good reasons for it.
Do you think, and I know you can't speak for the entire Republican caucus in the House or Senate, but do you think those legislators that receive funding from Governor Rauner should give that money back?
Well, I mean, look, money that's been given has been given. It was already used in campaigns, and it's done.
Time, you know, that was and quite frankly, as much as Republicans complain about Mike Madigan and the, you know, ensuring loyalty and all that kind of thing, you know, it also raised the question of Bruce Rauner and his money was doing the same thing of trying to ensure loyalty.
Well, and I might say, I mean, Rick, if you're I don't know if the governor has any friends left in the legislative caucuses, at least the rank and file. So when you're looking at that, I don't think anyone's going to accuse folks of loyalty to Rauner. I think you're going to see a lot of independence going forward. But your point your question goes to the broader point, which is Rauner has been putting a ton of money into many arms of the Republican Party. And what it's done is you're owned by the bank. The problem is if you own the whole village and the bank's loaning you that money, you know, you actually own the bank instead of the bank owning you. So Rauner, I mean, we have a really serious problem. Folks are depending on money from Rauner. At the same time, he's betraying our principles. So we're going to have a very difficult, we have to have a difficult family discussion within the Republican Party. Are we going to continue to stand with a guy just because he's writing big checks? I mean, if he wasn't writing these kind of checks, you think anybody anywhere in the Republican Party would still be with him for governor? That's a question I've asked, and I think the answer would be no.
Well, Leader Breen, who leads that discussion, that family discussion? Who was to initiate that?
And that's a good point. You know, folks rail against the establishment, and the establishment is, I mean, it's a flexible group, and to some extent, it's folks who are active on the various issues that make up the Republican coalition. That's the fiscal issues, social issues, and other issues. It's folks who have the capacity and willingness to put their money where their mouth is and to give money in that way. Others who are elected officials, I know, we're a part of that conversation. And that's what I've been trying to do since the governor, he had his press conference Thursday a week ago. I went over to the press conference. I was denied entry. So I stood outside and I laid out what some have called the indictment of Bruce Rauner. And so that, that's the indictment's been laid out. And as to who then prosecutes the case to conclusion, I'm not sure.
Spoken like the lawyer that you are, Representative Breen. We're speaking with Republican State Representative Peter Breen from Lombard, the Illinois House Republican floor leader. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're speaking with Republican State Representative Peter Breen from Lombard. He is the Illinois House Republican floor leader. We're talking about the state of the Illinois Republican Party these days. And Leader Breen, as we touched on with the fact of the money that the governor has put into the Republican apparatus in a variety of ways, is this also just kind of a test of, where are Republicans in Illinois these days?
Well, and that's the thing. I think Republicans as a voting bloc are probably pretty unified on their issues. I mean, I don't think that's really I don't know that that is the issue. I mean, the problem is, Rauner has now gotten so far out of step with folks. He has become toxic and radioactive is the word I've heard. In terms of for Republican elected officials and for Republican, regular Republican voters. So that's really where we're at with him.
So when we look at, let's look ahead to the veto session, and there's been lots of chatter that this could be a very interesting veto session because now that there's this apparent lack of allegiance to the governor, that maybe legislators who ideally should always vote their district interests will truly be more like a free agent and be able to do that and are not encumbered by the thought that the governor might mount someone to run a primary challenge.
Well, and so you always vote your district, certainly, but there are plenty of bills where your district is up in the air or it doesn't have a strong feeling. And so, and particularly when you're in a legislative minority, in those times, it often is better for you to stick together, have a common message, because since you're in the minority, you really have to break through.
You're not driving the message.
Messaging.
Yeah, you're not driving
the
message.
You're going to have to find a spot. Right. So remaining united, when it's consistent with the interests of your districts, is often helpful. So the issue now, though, is we are concerned less about the governor's desires in that and more about how do we, as a Republican caucus, move forward to present the best foot, present the best face, present the Republican principles that we agree on? I mean, folks in our Republican caucus agree on about 80% of things. Some things we don't, though. And so there will be places where people may say, hey, this is not really where I want to be. And so we're going to have some tough decisions and discussions about where do we want, you know, what course do we want to chart going forward as a Republican caucus?
Well, you know, I found it interesting the other day when, in light of what you said about Republicans, you know, being unified on most issues, is that, you know, in light of this turmoil, and the governor was explaining what he viewed the Republican Party stood for, but didn't mention that one of the planks of the state Republican Party platform was opposing taxpayer funding of abortions. But I also thought, you know, one of the issues in which I think Republicans are struggling with is what the governor stands for. And, you know, we know what his 44-point turnaround agenda has been, but what, you know, on issues, what do you stand for? Is that correct?
Well, certainly. And when you're looking, particularly when a guy looks you in the eye, he shakes your hand, makes a commitment to you, and then he flips around and lies, you know, lies. And it's only the latest in a series of things where you'd sit there and go, that doesn't seem consistent with your promise of no social agenda. You look at that, then you look at the fact that he is just cycling through staff members like crazy. And all these people were competent where they were before. They get with him, and all of a sudden, it's a bumbling. You know, I mean, you're making competent people look like they're bumblers. Hey, you know, at some point, it's not the people's fault. It's the boss's fault. And so that is where we are with the governor. And Rick, I've been trying to say, we need someone who will head the Republican Party, who can lead our cause, who is... has got really the opposite qualities of Rauner in terms of, you know, being principled, being able to get a deal done, you know, being able to unify the party, none of which he can do and none of which he is.
Well, I mean, was an example of some of these problems the fact that in trying to put together a budget compromise or the school, even the school funding formula change, that he wasn't really in the room?
Not just not in the room, but actually actively being unhelpful. So on the budget, look, we had Republicans cave at the end. I am not going to excuse the behavior. I mean, they have to answer to their districts for it. But had the governor shown some leadership over the prior 2 years to try to figure out a way to have our expenses match our revenues, balance the budget, propose something, get something done. Had he had any leadership, you would not have seen those Republicans capitulating at the end.
So because there would have been something
blame off of them.
There would have been something to hang on to as
right.
here's an end game kind of thing.
We went for 2 years with federal judges allowed to make all the spending for the state, and they were spending $5 billion, $6 billion a year more than we were taking in. And I mean, the governor didn't lift a finger. He didn't go to court and say, "Hey, judge, we can't afford this," or "Hey, judge, can we do this differently?" Or "Hey, Democrats in the legislature, why don't we figure something out?" There was none of that from this governor. So we need someone to run for governor who can actually, again, have the principles. If you want to say you're a fiscal conservative, that means you don't spend more than you have. Where is that principle? Negotiation, being able to get work done to the other side, and then unifying. I mean, those are those three things. You've got to have that in our gubernatorial candidate going forward.
And I know you say, you know, we have a deadline of, I believe, the first week of December for filing for candidacy, that getting petitions is not going to be a significant, the signatures on petitions is not going to be significant. But yet the clock is kind of ticking.
Absolutely. I mean, Rick, I know there are a number of people out there. I think any member of the General Assembly on the Republican side who voted against the tax increase, who voted against the sanctuary city, voted against taxpayer funding of abortion, I think nearly anyone, if they are properly funded and have an adequate campaign, can very easily make this petition requirement and beat the governor in the primary. I'm knocking on doors. The number one person I hear about is Bruce Rauner, and folks are furious. So, I mean, the room is there. I do worry that, you know, we have some folks who may be looking at candidacies that don't have the ability to, you know, they might be principled, but they don't have the ability or the proven ability to be able to negotiate and get a deal done with the Democrats, nor are they the sorts of people who could unify the party. So I am worried about, you know, that maybe folks are saying, hey, We're just going to beat Rauner, and then we're going to get whacked in the general. We just don't care about beating Pritzker in the general. I'm worried about that from a party standpoint.
Do you want to tell me?
That's where I'm at right now.
Do you want to tell me who you might be worried about among those names?
I don't want to mention that. I mean, I don't want to say I'm worried about a particular person's name. But if you want to talk about candidates, say go ahead. You can ask, and I'll either evade or I'll answer.
I actually think it's premature to talk about candidates at this point.
Okay.
I don't know if you share that view. I think there is name floating going on, as they call it.
Right. Well, again, I'm looking at it. The general election against J.B. Pritzker is going to be heavy money. There's going to be a lot of dirt slung. If the Republican Party is not, if you don't have a nominee who is someone we can get behind and unify behind, kind of in an all hands on deck mode, we're going to lose, guaranteed. And if you lose, you risk, if you have the wrong candidate there, you risk having an Alan Keyes style loss. So you're looking at a 20-point loss, and at which point J.B. Pritzker takes his $100 million and he starts using it in legislative races to make sure he has Democrat loyalists and has some cushion to get his agenda through the General Assembly, kind of as a reverse Rauner. So he buys a bunch of Democrat legislators and, you know, and takes out the Republicans so that we lose seats. I could see a really catastrophic result if you do have somebody that is in the general that we can't unify behind, who's maybe divisive, who is not shown an effective ability to negotiate with the Democrats, or who is not able to be principled.
After the party had just come out of the wilderness with Rauner's election.
We elected the one guy. I mean, we all thought he was competent because he'd done well in business. Apparently his skills for whatever type of business he, you know, was successful in do not transfer to government, or he himself doesn't have the temperament. The results are evident. I mean, look, we are not better off than we were 4 years ago with Bruce Rauner.
I'm going to have to leave it on that note. Republican State Representative Peter Breen from Lombard, the Illinois House Republican floor leader, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.